Welcome to the Wealth Studying Podcast. This is episode 35. It's October 14th, 2014. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager of InvestableWealth.com. Here at the Wealth Studying Podcast, we help you build your wealth and build your personal freedom. I like to say that money may not buy happiness, but it can buy freedom. And that's why every episode, we always reflect back to one of the 10 wealth building principles to help you make better decisions, to make you more informed, to better educate you. Wealth is a lifestyle, so you can't just focus on investing. You need to focus on your entire life. That's everything from raising your kids, choosing the right spouse, renting versus buying a home, paying off your mortgage early, whether you should invest in stocks or bonds, making wise career choices. All those things rolled up together are going to contribute to your net worth and your ultimate wealth. And since it's not about the money, it's about your personal freedom and happiness, you want to make as wise choices as you can. It's better to start young and it's better not to make mistakes, but that's usually not the case. So whether you're in your early teens, like I know some of you listeners are, or whether you're a little older, maybe 60, 70 years old, I know we have listeners on both ends of the age spectrum. I'm always amazed at the diversity of this audience. And I only find out about you when you email me or when you contact me, so please keep doing that. I appreciate those of you that have made an effort to go out and review the show or to rate the show. Thanks so much. That tells me a little bit about you and what you like. And then many of you have also got in touch with me through my website, either through my firm's website, investablewealth.com, or through the podcast website, wealthstudying.com. Keep those comments coming. Again, I'm way behind. I do read every one of them when they come in. I don't always get to reply to every one of them. There still are some that had some pretty good questions that are lingering out there. I do want to get back to you. Have just been really bogged down here lately. There's a lot going on in the stock market right now. I've also had multiple speaking engagements recently, so it's taken a lot of my time, but I do appreciate those comments and emails, so keep them coming in. That's how I know about you. That's how I know to help gear the show to your interests and the things that you want to hear about. In today's episode, it'll be a continuation of the previous podcast where we talked about the anatomy of a stock market trade, and specifically there, we drilled down on Southwest Airlines. That's ticker symbol LUV. Lima Uniform Victor. So if this is the first time you're listening to the podcast, you probably want to go back and make sure you listen to episode 34, because that's where we drilled down and got granular. We started with the overall trend in the market, and then we took it all the way down to the level of selecting Southwest Airlines. And again, as I've said before, this is not a recommendation. This is not advice of any kind. We're just using Southwest to illustrate a point. It does fit nicely into some of the current trends we're talking about. However, it's not on my watch list. At this point, I have no plans of purchasing it, either for myself or for my clients. So this is just for illustrative purposes only. But I think we did drill down and use good, sound investment decisions. We started at the overall 30,000-foot level, looking at a trend. And then we eventually took that down, used fundamental analysis and technical analysis to select Southwest Airlines. Again, if you're not familiar with those terms or you didn't hear the previous show, go back there and then listen to this episode part two. Because where we're going to start at with now is the actual decision to pull the trigger and to buy the stock. Before we get started with our main topic, I do want to remind you of the contest that we have going. This is an opportunity for you to speak with me for at least an hour or so. We'll do either a phone call or a Skype conversation. This is a chance for you to ask me whatever's on your mind about business, stock market, general investments, general questions like that. You'll have an hour or more of my time. Consider it a mentoring session. Again, not meant to give specific investment advice or recommendations. Just a casual conversation between us, two old friends. It'll be a little bit of a coaching and a mentoring exercise. If you'd like to take advantage of that, if you'd like to have your name put in the drawing to spend an hour with me on the phone, all you need to do is go back and look at the first 10 episodes. That's what I call the 10 wealth building principles. And I want you to select which one of those you think is the least downloaded. I have statistics on all my shows. I know which ones are most popular. And one of those is decidedly less downloaded than all the others. See which one you think that might be, and then go over to wealthstudying.com, leave me a comment there, tell me which one you think it is. If you're right, I'll put your name in the drawing. And that contest will run through the 26th of October, 11 p.m. West Coast Pacific Time. So that's the 26th of October. You got plenty of time. Go over there, listen to those shows if you haven't. Pick out which one you think is the least downloaded, and let me know. I'd love to have your name in the drawing, get a chance to talk to you on the phone. So to continue the anatomy of a stock trade, now that we have our stock picked out, we know we are definitely going to purchase Southwest Airlines. It's on our watch list. For this purpose, to illustrate a point here, we have to pretend that we're in an uptrend. Right now, the markets are definitely on thin ice. They're definitely under correction. In the next podcast, I will review that in detail. Not going to do it today. But so for our purposes, let's pretend that we have come through an uptrend. Because once you've drilled down and you've identified all your trends and all that and which one stock that it is that you want to purchase or which couple stocks you want to purchase, before you're actually going to make that trade, the first thing that's going to be at the top of your checklist is the market in an uptrend or is the market in some kind of a downtrend or correction? Again, currently we are in that downtrend. We are in the correction. So we're going to assume for our purposes that we are in an uptrend. And the reason that's so important and the reason that's the first thing on your list before you buy this stock or before you make any kind of a stock purchase is because, as I've mentioned before, there are no odds in the stock market. It's not like gambling. In gambling, you have set odds. In the stock market, all we have is risk and uncertainty. Now, we know there are certain outcomes, but we have no way and no one has no way of being able to accurately predict what those specific odds are. And although we can't determine what the odds are, we can at least act wisely and act prudently. We can at least try and do all we can to get those odds working in our favor. One of those things that we can do is to only purchase stocks when the market is in an uptrend. I'm not going to go into all those details in this episode. I've covered it before. I'll cover it in future episodes. But an uptrend basically means if you look at one of the major indexes, like the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ, and you look at a chart of that, you'll be able to see, is that chart generally moving in an upward pattern or is it moving in a downward pattern? If it's moving up, if it appears to be moving up to you over a period of days and weeks, then we're probably in an uptrend. Again, not going to go into the specifics on it right now. But the reason that that is so critical is that about 70 to 75% of all stocks follow the trend, right? It's like the rising tide lifts all boats. Sure, there's some exceptions, there's some outliers, but what did I say? 70 to 75%. That's a number that, although it's no guarantee, it can just help put those odds more on your side. You're never forced to buy a stock. You should never be in a position where you absolutely, have to invest that money today. So if it's not an optimum time to purchase, if the market doesn't look like it's in an uptrend, if the odds of 70 to 75% of the stocks going up don't look like that's going to occur because we're in a downtrend or some kind of correction, then why invest? No one's putting a gun to your head. You're under no pressure. I always say that a cash position is a position. If you think the market's too turbulent, if you think we're on thin ice, if you think there's red flags out there waving caution, just sit in cash for a few more days. Remember, if a salesman, a used car salesman or anybody, any type of person trying to put pressure on you, trying to say, you have to make a decision today, it's got to happen now, you just walk away from that. That's a deal that you don't want to make. The stock market is no exception. If you don't make the deal today, there'll be another one tomorrow or the next day or next year or next month. Take your time. It's your money. You worked hard to earn it. You don't want to waste it. Again, that's true in all things, not just the stock market. So for our purposes, again, let's pretend the market's in an uptrend. And perhaps we're lucky enough or our timing is good enough that we're just catching the very beginning of that uptrend. The market had been moving down. It had been in a correction over the period of 4 or 5 days, maybe 7 days. That momentum, that direction changed. The stock market started moving back up. The major indexes are moving up. You see a big jump in volume that stocks traded in a particular day with a price of that index moving up. That's what we would call a follow-through day. That would be a very good time to buy a stock like Southwest Airlines. Again, not giving a recommendation here. We're just using this as an example. So let's say that happened. You saw that follow-through day as we're coming out of a correction. Southwest was one of the stocks on your watch list. We know it has a particular personality that's exhibited over the past year. Again, not going to talk about that really in a lot of detail today, but that's something we did cover in the previous episode. But we've set our point not to just buy Southwest at any old time, because we're not planning on buying holding this forever. I should have mentioned that. This trade that we're talking about is really more of a momentum trade or a swing trade. We think Southwest is overall in an uptrend. It's being favored by maybe some short and long-term trends. And so that's why the timing of this is so critical. If we just wanted to buy Southwest and hold it for the next 25 years, then it really wouldn't matter. We could just go in there, buy it, be done with it, put it away for 25 years, not worry about selling it. Personally, I don't invest that way. I don't encourage you to invest that way, but many people do. So we're talking about swing or momentum trading today. And our focus is on the short term in this example. Perhaps in other episodes, I'll talk more about why you would want to invest in a fundamental nature. And some stocks, I do that. I look at it more in the fundamentals than on the chart. I will have to add, 9 times out of 10, though, I should probably be paying more attention to the charts than the fundamentals. Because whenever a stock falls apart on the charts, It usually doesn't matter how good the fundamentals are. It still falls apart, and I end up holding that stock longer than I wanted to get back to where I wanted to be. But let's get back to considering Southwest Airlines. So the market's now in an uptrend. It's gone through a follow-through day. We know that Southwest Airlines is one of those 70 or 75% of stocks. It's moving up with the market because we can see it on the chart. It had been acting unusual for its personality. It was actually trading, you know, below its 50-day moving average, but yet above its 200-day moving average. Again, these are things we discussed in the previous episode. But we can see how that's changed around. We can see how the momentum is moving, and now Southwest Airlines stock is moving up. It's moving up in higher volume. Perhaps we want to get in when it crosses its 50-day moving average. Perhaps we even want to hold back a little longer, and we want to wait until the 10-day moving average crosses the 50-day moving average instead of just the price of the stock crossing the 50-day moving average. Perhaps we're going to be a little risky and we're going to buy in when the price is below the 50-day moving average, but it does cross above its 10-day moving average. All kinds of different scenarios. I can't tell you which one is exactly right for you, nor which one would be specific for Southwest Airlines. It really comes down to your trading style. My personal opinion, specifically in looking at the Southwest chart right now, though, is that I perhaps might be take a gamble and get into it when the price of the stock crosses above the 10-day moving average, assuming that that is still occurring below the 50-day line. That would be a little risky, though. Remember, the personality of this stock for the last year or so has been to never be below the 50-day. Right now, it's been below the 50-day for several trading sessions. And it's about not quite halfway between the 50 and the 200-day. It's a little closer to the 50-day. So that's not a bad sign. But remember, we're still in a correction. We don't know what that chart's going to do. It could easily fall through its 200-day moving average. There's a lot of problems out there. Southwest is holding up very well, though, considering this correction that's going on. And I think that's because it does favor some of the trends that we talked about. It's an American carrier, primarily U.S. routes. Probably not going to be as affected by others with the Ebola scare or the rise of the U.S. dollar. Will probably be favored by the lower fuel costs. So that might be one reason why we might want to jump into the stock a little early, get into it before it crosses its 50-day line, but do wait until it's decidedly showing that it's moving up. And again, maybe waiting until it at least crosses its 10-day moving line, which in all likelihood will be below the 50-day moving average. But whatever sign it is that you've picked, that's what you want to do. You want to stick with that. You want to either put in an order to purchase when that happens or be watching that day to make the deal. And let's walk through the specific nuts and bolts of what you would actually do to purchase a stock for those of you that have never done it, or for those of you that maybe have purchased stocks, but you're still not familiar with some of the phraseology or the terminology of the different options you have when you do purchase a stock. So let's look at those. Let's pretend that you're in your account at E-Trade or Schwab or whatever kind of discount broker you use. Now, I don't know exactly what screen you're going to be looking at, but I'm just going to try and talk you through some of the terms and the phraseology so that this all makes more sense for you. So you're in your account. Generally, it's going to ask you, the first thing is going to be asking you, what type of a trade is this going to be? Is it going to be a cash trade, a margin trade? Are you going to be selling short? Well, we're purchasing, so we know we're not going to be selling short. But selling short would imply that you think that the price of the stock is going down. And so, in effect, what you're going to do would be borrow shares of that stock from your brokerage firm. You're going to sell those short, which means you would put those out for sale in the marketplace. You would get paid for those. And then, since you're borrowing those shares that you don't own from your broker, you would owe them a certain percentage. It's kind of like going to a pawn shop. You would sort of owe them a percentage of interest over the time you're holding that stock until you actually buy it back to replace them. And then if the stock pays out any kind of dividends or anything like that, you would have to pay that back as well. So you'd be borrowing a stock, you'd be selling it short. Your intent would be that the price of that stock is going to go down at a future date. When it does go down at a future date, you purchase it at that time, give those shares back to your broker, settle up with him on any kind of interest or dividends that you owe them, and then hopefully you've made a profit on the difference. So, for example, you'd sell the stock short at $10. It continues to fall down and go lower. You buy it back when it hits $5. Your gross gain there would be the difference between the $5 you bought it at. So your gross profit would be a $5 per share. And then, of course, like I say, you'd have to settle up with your broker on whatever fees, dividends, interest type things that you may owe him. Generally, you're not allowed to sell short in a retirement account, so that would have to be something you could only do if you had a normal cash brokerage type account. It tends to be highly speculative. I don't do a lot of selling short, but there you have it. There's a quick down and dirty explanation of what it is. So some of the other options here you're going to have, though, is whether you're going to buy this on cash or on margin. Again, if this is something you're trading, a retirement tax-advantaged account like an IRA or a Roth, then you're probably not going to be allowed to use margin either. So you can't sell things short. You can't use margin. You can only use cash. But for those of you that may be trading in a non-retirement brokerage account, just to explain what margin would be, that would mean that you're going to buy these shares with money that you don't have. So in this example, it isn't like selling short where you're borrowing the shares from your broker. You're just borrowing the money from your broker, and then you're taking that money to purchase the stock. Again, that's speculative. I generally don't advise you do that. The people that do that are generally day traders. I've made a lot of money over the years swing trading. I've never really made any money day trading. Too short term for me, too speculative. Not something I recommend. And then the cash position obviously would be cash. You're just going to buy this with cash. And that's something obviously that would, as I said, would probably be required of you if you're doing this in a retirement account. They're going to make you use cash anyways. And that just means that if you only have $10,000, you can't buy any more than $10,000 of stock, right? You can only buy the stock up to the limit of the amount of cash that you have available in that account to purchase. So the next thing is going to ask you, once you put in your stock symbol, you're going to put in LUV, Lima Uniform Victor. That's the symbol of Southwest Airlines. It's going to ask you what type of, you know, action do you want to take? Do you want to buy this? Do you want to sell it? So for our purposes, or for the action, what we want to do with this trade, we are simply going to buy, and we're going to buy ticker symbol LUV. It's going to ask for the quantity. Now the stock's trading for around $30. You know, you figure if you're going to buy, say, 100 shares, you're talking around $3,000 there. Maybe you're going to buy 200 shares. Maybe you're a high roller. You're going to purchase 1,000 shares. The amount of shares all comes down with how big of a position do you want to take. I generally recommend that you don't put any more than 10% of your portfolio or your net worth in any one stock. But that's up to you. Maybe you only have $2,000. It's the first $2,000 that you've ever invested or something like that. You really don't have enough money to split that up over 5 or 10 stocks. So you want to put it all on Southwest Airlines. That's up to you. When I was a young trader, when I didn't have a lot of money, I did those kind of things. But again, that was because I was only trading, say, $1,000 or $2,000. If I lost that, I would be easily making that up out of my next paycheck. It wasn't going to take food off the table. It wasn't like my kids were going to go without shoes. Now, let's say that you're, you know, 40 or 50 or 60 years old and you have a $500,000 portfolio now, or a, you know, $300,000 portfolio, or $1 million portfolio. Well, now you've got enough money where you can diversify. You wouldn't want to put your entire portfolio, $500,000, into this one stock. You don't know what's going to happen. It could literally, these planes could fall out of the sky and crash and burn. You could lose all your money. If you're 40, 50, 60 years old, you may be, you know, you've probably saved 20 years to get to that money. You're not going to be able to save, you know, make that up in one paycheck like you could if it was only $1,000 or $2,000. That's why you want to diversify. So again, in that case, if, you know, if it's your portfolio, you probably don't want to put more than 10% in this stock. Now, I know some people are higher gamblers. They do put a higher percentage in. Again, in the past, I've done things like that with my own money. I put in maybe up to 25%. So I'd find four stocks that I thought were really winners, and I'd split my portfolio up across those four stocks. That's very risky. I've made a lot of money that way. I've also lost a lot of money that way. I'd reiterate to you, you probably want to stick with 10% or less of your portfolio. So figure that out. Is that 100 shares? Is that 1,000 shares? Whatever that number is, plug it in. Now, the next question you're going to be asked is, what type of trade is this in terms of the price type? Is this a market order, or is this a limit order? Now, what those terms mean is a market means that you're buying it immediately. If you put in, you know, buy 100 shares, and then you select the type that you want to be a market trade, and then you hit, you know, submit or verify your order, it's going to give you the opportunity to look at that. It'll probably show you what it thinks the estimated cost would be, what the price you're going to be paying is, and then you hit submit. That means, boom, you have just, if you're trading during normal trading hours, you have just purchased 100 or 1,000 shares of whatever of that stock at the market, which means as soon as your order goes into the queue and as soon as it gets executed, whatever that next trade is, it may be $30.01, it may be $30.05, it may be $32.03, just whatever that next trade is, you purchased it because you purchased it at the market. Now, your other option is to put in a limit order. So, for example, let's just say that Southwest is trading at $30 even. you may not want to pay one more penny than $30. So you put in specifically, you want to place a limit order of $30. So the next time someone is willing to sell that 100 shares of Southwest Airlines for $30, you would queue up and you would be in line to purchase it at that price. Now, again, some people get all crazy and obsessed about putting in limit orders versus market orders. They say, you know, well, if you put in a market order, you're always going to pay more. You know, that could be true, but if you remember what I've said in previous podcasts, I purchase stocks that have solid fundamentals and that have good liquidity. And so if I'm just placing an order like Southwest Airlines, that's, you know, I'm putting in, say, 100 or 200 share order, and it's trading 1 million or 2 million shares in a day, my little 100 or 150 share order isn't really going to make any difference. It isn't going to be a dent in anything, right? It's kind of like, you know, spinning in the ocean. No one's going to notice. And so I would say generally, if I put in a market order for just 100 or 200 shares on a stock like that, that has high liquidity, that's trading all these millions of shares in one day, I'm going to get that price. I'm going to get that stock for about whatever it's trading at. I mean, if I look at it and it says it's trading at $30.02 and I hit market order, I'm probably going to get it for really close to right around $30.02. Now, that would not be true if this was a very illiquid stock, right? If this is a stock that only trades 20 or 30 or 50,000 shares a day, and I'm going in there and I'm buying 100 or, you know, 1,000 shares, in that case would be a huge amount, then I would definitely want to place a limit order, because my order could affect the overall momentum or price structure that's being charged that particular day. But again, that's why I try and avoid those stocks. I generally, unless I have a really specific reason, I wouldn't purchase that kind of a stock. I just want to buy a stock that's highly liquid, that I can get into and get out of at a moment's notice and not create any waves. You as an individual investor are probably not going to have liquidity problems when it comes to placing, you know, 100, 200 share orders if you're purchasing anything better than a penny stock. So any large cap stock, mid cap stock, even for the most part, probably any larger of the small cap stocks, you're not going to run into a problem with that because you're just purchasing such a small amount of shares. Now, I do place limit orders, but I usually generally do that when I'm trading with my client money. So let's say I'm going out and I'm making a $4 million purchase. I'm going to put not only my own money, but a bunch of client money. For example, say in Southwest Airlines, even though it's still trading 1 million or more shares for that particular day, if I'm going to go out and drop, just to keep the math simple, let's say $3 million. Let's say I was going to make a $3 million transaction on behalf of my clients, and that would not be one order, because I don't trade money in a mutual fund. I trade individual stock portfolio positions. So if I had, you know, client A, B, C, D, E, F, and I decided that they all should be in this particular Southwest stock, I would generally put in the same order for all, you know, 5 or 10 or 15 of these clients, whatever it is. And let's just say collectively, that whole order, I would put it in an order basket that would go in as, say, 5 or 10 individual orders, but cumulatively, it would represent $3 million. I use that number because the stock's trading at $30. That would mean that there would be a total of 100,000 shares to be split up over, say, you know, 5 or 10 client accounts. Now, that 100,000 shares, if the stock's trading at 1 million shares a day, you know, that still would represent 10% of the trading volume for that stock in one day. And that would be concerning to me. That's why I would say, well, gee, if I put this in at $30, I'm going to specifically say I want to place a limit order and I don't want to pay more than $30. Because by putting in just a market order for, say, 100,000 shares on a stock that would only trade 1 million shares in a day, that's like a 10% surge all at one time in volume. That could make the price bounce up. Maybe it would bounce up to $30.50 or $31 or something. And I wouldn't want that to happen. I would want to specifically say, you know, I have a particular range, and it doesn't have to be at what it's trading at. Let's just say, for example, the stock is trading at $30, and I've looked at it, and I said, you know what, I think this is a good deal all the way up to $30.50. Well, I could put in a limit order at that range, or I could, you know, try and break up my orders and say, well, instead of putting in 100,000 order all at one time, I'm going to put it in, you know, increments of 10,000 shares. Generally, as an individual investor, I don't think that's something you're going to have to worry about. I think the majority of you are just going to be going out. You're going to be buying 50, 100, you know, 75 shares of a stock at a time. That's assuming the stock's trading for around $30. If you're going out there and you're buying Apple and it's, you know, it's $100 a share, maybe you're only going to be buying 10 shares. If that's the case, you know, you really don't have to worry about trying to put a limit on that kind of an order. Your order's just not big enough to have an impact or make a difference. So probably the next choice that you're going to have in placing this order is it's going to ask you what kind of time frame or what kind of time and force do you want this order to be? Do you want this to be a day order? Is this a good till cancel order? So some of those options might be if it's a day order, as the name implies, it means that that order you're putting in, if you don't get it for the price you want, for example, it's a limit order and you said you don't want to pay any more than $30.05. If for whatever reason it can't fill that order at $30.05, if it's a day order, at the end of the day when the market closes at 4 o'clock Eastern, that order is canceled and whatever hasn't been filled is voided. If it's a good till canceled, depending upon what broker you're using, you may have options, you may have choices of how long you want that to be, but generally it's for 90 days. And so that order would be active and open for the next 90 days, for example, and it would be good until it was canceled or until that 90-day period happened. So if it never got to $30.05, at the end of 90 days, that would be canceled. Some broker platforms on their order section, they let you say, well, I want this to be good for, you know, for a week through the end of this week or through the close of the month, something like that. You may also get the option of asking that it be immediate or killed, or sometimes another name for that is fill or kill. Generally, though, if you're putting in a market order, as I think most of you are probably going to put in, if you put in a market order, that's a day order because, again, it's going to be executed whenever you're up in the queue. As soon as your order comes up, it's going to go before that market maker or that, you know, computer algorithm, and it's going to say, here's an order for 100 shares at the market. So that just means whatever it is, $30.01, $30.05, $30.03, $29.32, whatever it is. Whatever that next market order is, if you imagine it's like an auction and people are saying, you know, $30, $31, $31.12, that's the way it is. It's just all done with computers now. So a market order is the cleanest. It's the simplest. It's that day order. Generally, when you purchase a stock, that's probably going to be the way you purchase it. And when you sell it, it might be a little more nuanced than that. We'll talk about it. But again, my thoughts on this is for you as a normal individual investor, you put in how many shares you want, you know, 100, a couple hundred. You let it be no more than 10% or so of your portfolio. You put in a market order and you buy it and you're done with it. So again, for our purposes, let's say you bought Southwest Airlines and you got it at $30. And that's right when it was bouncing off its 50-day moving average. We'll just use that as our illustration. You got in there on the first day of the general overall uptrend was going forward that day. There was a follow-through day. Your stock was bouncing off the 50-day moving average. You went in there and you bought 100 shares. So you have roughly, you know, $3,000 into Southwest Airlines. Depending upon what broker you use, let's just say they're going to charge you probably about $10 to make the transaction. So it costs you $3,000 for the stock and then $10. Maybe there's another couple bucks in there with taxes. You know how the government is. They're going to try and get their hands in on everything. But you're going to end up owing your broker somewhere around $3,010. Now, because of the arcane system of the market that we work under, even though you probably had to have cash in there to purchase it, or, you know, this was your perhaps done in your retirement account and you couldn't use margin, you specifically had to use cash. Either way, they still give you 3 days, 3 business days to clear that account. And again, this goes back to the old days when you used to have to send things in through the mail. But you still have that. So you'll see in your account, even though you've purchased 100 shares, that $3,010 doesn't come out right away. It'll say something like settlement date, and that date will be 3 days or, you know, 2.5 days into the future. And when that settlement day comes around, that $3,010 will be taken out of your account. You will have that 100 shares of stock in there immediately, though. As soon as your market transaction goes through, you'll see that 100 shares of Southwest Airlines appear in your account. But again, you won't see that $3,010 money taken out of your account for about 3 days. So now the next thing you want to do is whenever you buy a stock, you never buy a stock without knowing when you want to get out of it. And this is particularly true of these momentum, short-term swing trades that we're talking about in this example. So we got in at $30. We felt that was the point when the market was just going into an uptrend. The stock was just breaking out above its 50-day moving average. And the question is, how long do we want to hold it? Well, of course, we'd like to hold it until it gets to $1,000 or $150 or whatever, but that's probably not likely. We're trading stocks on the assumption that everything goes up and down, right? There's a time and season for all things. We've got in at a right time. We're going to ride this wave or ride this momentum up. And we'd like to see, say, a 20 or 25% increase in our money over the next, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. Now, these aren't numbers that we're just pulling out of the air. The reason we selected that 20 to 25% increase is generally when a stock goes on a short-term run like that, that's about how far it runs up before it then either tapers off or drops down again. And remember, we selected Southwest not only because it had good fundamentals, but also because it looked like it had good technicals. It was in an overall uptrend on its own. It was following an uptrend with different trends that were going on in the marketplace. It had already corrected significantly, and we felt that it was moving back up again. So when we look at the chart, we know that its all-time high previously had been at about 35. Now we're buying in at 30. So if it just goes back up to its all-time high where it had been a few weeks previously, you know, if it just basically what we would call a retracement, if it retraces back to where it had been, well, then you're going to get about a 15, 16% return on your money at that point. And we feel that there's a high likelihood. Remember, there's no guarantees. There's no odds we're playing here, but we do feel that since we're in an uptrend, since Southwest Airlines is being favored by this stock, that it is likely to at least get back to where it was trading at. So we'll be putting around 15, 16% in our pocket at that point. And because we've also identified this stock as having a personality where it generally goes above its moving average and then keeps growing from there each time it has a good favorable earnings report, it bounces up another 5, 10, 15%. And so if it just makes it back to $35 where it had been before, we'll get about that 15, 16%. If it can go higher than that, if it can hit, say, $36, we'll get about a 20% return. And if it can go all the way up to $37.50, which again doesn't look unlikely as we draw, just pencil in a trend line on the chart and we see where it had been moving prior to this latest correction and say, well, Julie, if it just goes on that, if we extend this out about 3 or 4 months, it looks like maybe it isn't unreasonable that it could hit $37.50. That would be about a 25% return on our money. But we're going to not be greedy. You know, the market's been up and down lately. We're going to say, you know what? We're going to take a 20% profit. If we can get to $36 roughly, that'll give us a 20% return on our money. We're going to be happy with that. We think that's going to happen in the next 6 to 8 weeks. And so as soon as we purchase this stock, we're also going to put in a sell order. But remember, we're not going to sell it at the market. We're not going to sell it at the market like we bought it at the market. That would imply that we're going to just sell it right away at the next available price. And that's not what we want to do. We want to put a limit order on this stock. We're going to say that we don't want to sell it until it gets at least to $36 a share. And then that way, we know that when we're at our job working or we're doing whatever, we don't have to be near the computer. If over the next day or two or week or, you know, 5 weeks, whatever it is, if that stock suddenly shoots up and hits $36, our order is in place. We'll be able to sell our 100 shares or 200 shares, whatever we bought, at $36. That's a limit sell order. We've made our 20% profit. We didn't have to be in front of the computer, and it's done. Now, that's a perfect way to make money. It's not an easy way, and I wouldn't encourage you to just set it and forget it. You want to be watching this stock, not necessarily every day, but you want to be watching it frequently. Because remember, you only have no more than 10% of your portfolio in this stock, so you're not going to go bankrupt or be able to quit your job and be rich no matter what happens. So you're not going to not put food on the table if it loses, and you're not going to be able to quit your job if it wins. So you don't have to obsess over it. In fact, you don't want to obsess over it. You want to make a rational decision. You put in your order, and you're going to hope for the best. You are going to watch it from time to time, every day, every other day, something like that, just to make sure that nothing's changed, that there's no new information that you weren't aware of. And that information is going to work both ways. You may find out, for example, that really good news has come out about that stock, and it's likely to not only get to $36, but to way exceed that, to maybe go up to that $37.50 or $40, $45 a share. You might want to get in there and cancel your limit order and say, no, I'm going to ride this under the new information, under the change in fundamentals, under the change in this particular trend. I'm going to change that order, and I don't want a 20% profit. I want a 50% profit or whatever. That's unlikely to happen, but that is a possibility. The more likely scenario is bad news is going to come out. You may want to put in an order rather than just to sell it if it goes up. You might want to have an order in where you can sell it if it goes down. It all depends on what type of trading platform your discount broker offers and what type of sales transactions they let you put in. But for the most part, they're probably going to let you put in things like stop orders, stop limit, or trailing stops. So let's talk about each of those. So again, this is once you've bought the stock and you're looking to sell it, you bought it at say $30 and you want to put a limit on that. You say, I don't want to lose any more than 10% on this stock. So if it drops $3, that would be a 10% loss because it's going to fluctuate, right? Now, be aware, if you buy this stock at $30, the minute you purchase it, it could go down to $29 or $28. It could just happen that quick. And you have to determine how long you want to ride out that downtrend. if you think it's a really good fundamental stock, and I've done this in the past where I say, you know what, this stock, it's going to have some big swings here and there, but fundamentally it's sound. I'm going to hold on to it until it at least gets to, you know, $50 or whatever. I've done that. I will add that I oftentimes want to do that. I regret it, but you may want to do that. And that's kind of combining a momentum play with a value play where you know that, hey, I think I'm going to catch the momentum, but even if I don't, this stock isn't going to go out of business. It's a good stock. There's some things maybe negative with it, but it's going to ride those out and I'm in it for the long term. You may not choose to do that though. It may be wiser to say, hey, I'm going to limit my losses to 5%, 8%, 10%. For our purposes, just because the math is easy and because it really doesn't violate too many rules, we can just say you should limit your losses to 10%. That's a good round number. Generally, if you purchase a stock at what, you know, what is that right price, what looks like a correct technical price based on the charts, it probably shouldn't fall more than 8 to 10% unless it's in trouble. So again, you bought this stock, Southwest Airlines, you purchased it at $30, a 10% move would be a $3 move. So if the price dropped to $27, that would be a 10% loss for you. So you could go in and put in a sell stop order. Stop, that's S-T-O-P, like you want to stop it. Put in a sell stop order to sell it at $27. And again, that's going to ask you if it's, you know, good just for till today or good till canceled or good to the end of the month. You're probably going to want to make this one good till canceled, you know, let it ride out over that 90-day period. And then you're safe. As long as your stock does not go below $27, you'll still own that stock. If it drops below $27, it'll automatically execute it as a market order. You'll be next up in the queue and you'll sell at whatever the market price is. Now, if this stock, you've heard of flash crashes. That's where all of a sudden a stock just, the price of it just falls apart. It goes into a total free fall and maybe the price of it drops 50%. Over a 15-minute period, and then boom, it's back up to where it was. That's called a flash crash. That can also not only happen over a period of, you know, 15 minutes or 15 seconds, it can happen over a period of a few days. If the bottom falls out of a stock and everybody panics, and if everybody's using the same, you know, stop order strategy that you're using, everybody's saying, well, hey, if it goes down 5, 10, 15%, I'm automatically going to sell it. Well, what happens is, say a Southwest airline plane crashes or rumored to have crashed. The stock was trading at $32, and then the rumor goes out that the plane either crashed or, you know, hijackers hijacked it or something. Well, there could be a panic in the market, and either all airline stocks or specifically Southwest stock could all of a sudden just plunge, and then all this computer selling comes in. And that's going to be all the big pension funds. All those guys are going to be selling at the same time you're selling because you've all got the stop loss order in. So all of a sudden, the stock goes from like $31, $32, it drops down to your $27 trigger. And then you get next up in the queue. But remember, all these people are in front of you because they have bigger orders. And when your $27 stop order gets executed as a market trade, the stock has fallen precipitously again. Remember, it's in free fall. So it's no longer at $27. Maybe it's at $26.50 or $24.95 or whatever. In fact, it could even go up the other way. It could have fallen down to your $27 sell price, which would have executed you to get into the queue to take the next market trade, but then things have turned around and people are buying it again, and so instead of you selling it at $27, maybe you got to sell at $27.05 or $28.50 or whatever. Again, it could have risen. Whenever you have that stop order in and it gets executed, all it means is that you go into the queue and you go in as a market order. You are definitely going to sell it. You just don't know the price. It could be above or below wherever you set that stop. So you may be saying, well, I don't want that to happen. I don't want to take any less than $27 even. Well, that would not be a stop order. That would be a sell stop limit order. Okay, this gets a little complicated, but that is an option. So you're not only going to sell it, you're not only going to sell it as a stop, but you're going to sell it at a limit. So in that case, it's two choices. You would click that you want to sell, and then you'd say, I want to sell it as stop, and I want the stop to be $27. And then you have the choice on the limit, and it's going to say, well, what do you want the limit to be? Now remember, your stop loss means that order will not be executed until the stock gets traded at $27. Now your limit can be $27. Your limit could be $26.50 or $26.95, or it can be whatever you set it at. But it's just saying that unlike the stop order where you go in at a market price, in this case, in a stop limit, whenever your order gets triggered at the 27, you would then have another kind of algorithm function that says, okay, boom, it hit the stop loss amount. Now, what do you want to sell it at? And that's where you get to put in the limit. And that's where you may say, hey, I don't want to sell it any more than 27 even or 26.95 or whatever that number is. That stops you from getting caught up in a flash crash. It also, though, may prevent you from selling the stock. Because if you say, well, I only want to sell it at $27, if that next market order comes up below $27, let's say it's $26.50, well, you cannot execute your order because you limited your order to $27. And so if over the course of that day, or you know, if you have this in for a month's period or whatever, if it never gets back up to your limit of $27, you still held the stock, and you'll theoretically that stock could go all the way down to zero and be worthless. So there's a lot of things to think about. It is not as simple. A lot of people think you just set it and forget it, but that's not the case. You're putting in your order. You might put in a stop loss. You might put in a stop limit. These are all things you have to think about. A third option is something called a trailing stop. So what a trailing stop is going to do, it's going to be more of not so much of helping you cut your losses. What it's going to be designed to do is to help you keep your profits. So here's how a trailing stop goes, and here's how it helps preserve your profits. Remember, if you just put in a stop order at, say, 27, that's going to protect you from overall losing more than 10% of the money you invested. But if the airlines go up to, say, $33 and you still have your stop at 27, then that stop order that you put in will keep your overall loss at only 10%. But now you're going all the way from $33 down to 27. And so you're not only losing some principal there, but you're also losing all that gain that you would have had if the stock goes up to $32 or $33. Now you're going to lose $2 or $3 in gain. That would have been more wiser to try and preserve that. So the way you would do that is by putting in a trailing stop. And for example, rather than putting in the stop or the stop limit order, you could just say, I want to put a trailing stop in of $3. So if the price ever drops $3 below where it's currently at, your order would be executed as a market trade and you'd sell that stock. You know, you'd sell your 100 shares of the stock. So if you bought it at $30, you'd say, I'm going to put a $3 trailing stop in there. If it would go down to $27, it would sell. But this is always moving with it as it closes. So for example, let's say that your stock is not going down, but it's going up, and Southwest Airlines is now at, you know, $35, and all of a sudden it drops down to 32. Your order, your trailing stop order would be executed because you said you didn't want it to drop more than $3. So it's taking $3 off of that most recent high, which would have been, you know, like say $35. That's a way that's built in to help you preserve your gains. And it doesn't have to be a dollar amount. You can also put in a percentage amount. Again, you could say, I want to put in a trailing stop for 10% so that if it ever falls by 10% in any given day, sell at that point. So there's a lot of things to think about, okay? Trading stocks is not easy. I always say that the easiest way to destroy your wealth is to get an ex-wife. The second easiest way to destroy your wealth is to invest in something that you don't know about. You're not going to simply go in and say, hey, Southwest Airlines looks like a good deal. It looks like it's being favored on these low cost of jet fuel. I'm going to buy it and sell it in the next 3 months at a 25% profit. It's not that easy. If it was that easy, everybody would do it. And you can look around you and know that everybody's not doing it. So it's not that easy. You have all these complicated strategies to think about. And we just barely scratched the surface. We just talked about simply the nuts and bolts of putting in a basic buy and a basic sell order, and very rudimentarily talked about the technicals of why you might decide to purchase and what might be your decision point to exit. We didn't even go into any great detail about looking at the chart for the sell point and saying, I think the stock has support at $27, so that's why I'm going to select $27 instead of just using it as a 10% default. It's not something that we can cover in one podcast. People spend careers and lifetimes trying to figure out these strategies. The important thing is for you to start out small. Start out thinking that no matter what you're going to invest, you're going to lose it. That way you'll learn, and you probably won't make a whole lot of money. In fact, you might not make any money at all, even if you're right, because your trades are going to be so small, you'll have transaction fees to pay. You may come out just breaking even, but the point is you're learning something. How much would it take you to go to a college, you know, some kind of university, and take that for a 3 or 4 month course? You know, you'd probably end up paying $1,000 or more to do that at a university. Certainly if you went to one of these options trading classes or day trading classes, even the ones that try and rope you in for a free class, I mean, generally those are several thousand. I've seen them for as much as $5,000 or $10,000 to take a trading class. So if you go out and you put down $1,000 on Southwest Airlines and you end up breaking even, but over that 2 or 3 or 4 week period, 5 month period, you learned from it. You felt what it was like to have the skin on the line, to have your money in the game. You came up with a plan. You executed it. You determined when to buy. You watched for that sell point. You determined when to sell, whether it was a sale at a profit or a sale at a loss. You know, you followed your plan. And even if you lost the entire $1,000, well, again, that's probably a whole lot less than you would have paid it to a university to teach you, and not anywhere near what you're going to learn by trading it on your own. Let's talk a little bit more about when you do want to sell that. Again, I think you should sell, particularly in the kind of market we're in now. Don't get greedy. If you can make a 20% move in the period of, you know, 6, 7, 8 weeks, maybe 3 months, I think you take that 20% and you run with it. The really only consequence you have is perhaps you're going to have a capital gain on that if this is done outside of a tax-advantaged account like an IRA or a Roth. And to me, that's just an argument for you to definitely have an IRA or a Roth to trade in. But even if this is just a regular cash brokerage account, it's not tax-advantaged, you're going to have to pay taxes on that. You know, we're going to assume that you're not Bill Gates and you're not talking about billions of dollars here. Particularly if you're only going to buy 100 or so shares of something, you're really talking about a negligible amount of money. And for our purposes, let's just say you have a $300,000 portfolio and it's all cash. None of it's tax advantaged. So you have $300,000. Now remember, you listened to my 10% rule and you didn't put any more than 10% of that into any one stock. We went into an uptrend. You picked 10 stocks that you absolutely loved. So you put $30,000 in each stock. And miraculously, at the end of, you know, 6 weeks, every one of those stocks went up 20%. So now you have a 20% short-term gain because you have to hold a stock for 1 year and 1 day to make it a long-term gain. And a long-term capital gain means that it would be taxed at, I think it's 15%. I don't give tax advice, so don't listen to me on that. They change the numbers around so much, I don't even stay current on them. I just know that I have to pay it, so I don't even bother caring what it is. I believe a long-term capital gain now, if you hold a stock for 1 year and 1 day, again, I believe it's 15%. I could be wrong. It was 10%. It was 12% for a while. I think with Obamacare and everything, they've raised it up to 15% now. It doesn't matter. You're going to pay it whatever it is. But in our example, we're not holding that long. Remember, we in this particular example, we were talking about swing trading or momentum trading. And this is pretty much where you're looking at your stock you've picked based on this probably a short-term trend. And if it doesn't make a move in, say, 2 weeks to 3 months, then your trend that you tried to identify was wrong, and you're probably just going to sell the stock and move on. So for our example, let's just say 3 months went by, you picked 10 stocks, you know, you were absolutely the best stock picker in the world. All the stars were aligned for you. You made 20% on each one of them. You now have a profit of $60,000, right? That would be your $300,000 stock portfolio. Everything went up 20%. So that would leave you with a short-term capital gain of $60,000. And we're assuming that this was in a cash account. It's not an IRA or Roth or any kind of tax-advantaged account. You just have $300,000 sitting around in cash. You put it all into the stock market. Now, at the end of that 3 months, you just went up $60,000 and you're saying to yourself, I don't want to sell this because I don't want to have to pay taxes on $60,000 because if you hold it less than 1 year and 1 day, it's a short-term capital gain and it gets treated as regular normal income. So if your normal income bracket is 20% or 25% or 36% or whatever it is, that's what you're going to pay on this money. And it's the incremental difference. You know, if you're making $100,000 and say you're in a 27% tax bracket and an additional $60,000 would put you into say a 32% tax bracket, you're not going to pay that 32% on all $160,000 of your income. You're only going to pay it on that, whatever that incremental part that puts you into that next tax bracket is. And let's just say for our purposes that this $60,000 puts you into a new incremental tax bracket of 30%, okay? And I'm just pulling that number out of the air just to illustrate a point. That's on the high end of the tax spectrum, but certainly well within what many of you listeners might be in if you had a $60,000 capital gain. So if you had to pay 30% on your $60,000 short-term capital gain as normal under a normal income tax bracket, that would mean that you would owe the government $18,000. And that's why you may be saying, gee, I don't want to sell this because I don't want to have to, you know, give those people in Washington $18,000 or the people in my state capital. Well, here's what I want you to consider. That was a 20% gain. You invested $300,000. You made $60,000. Now you're going to have to potentially give up $18,000 for taxes. That means that your gain, instead of being a 20% gain, you really only made a 14% gain. So again, this is the argument for putting as much money as you can into tax-advantaged accounts like Roths and IRAs, because those are either tax-deferred or totally non-taxable. And you can see how much you're going to have to give up to the government. But you know, the point of the matter is, you just have to give things up to the government. It may be extortion money, they may all be crooks, but we have to pay our taxes. That's a system we live in. If you don't like it, you know, I would advise you to try and move somewhere that either doesn't impose these type of taxes, or to just not trade at all. Because if you do trade, you're going to have to pay these kind of taxes if it's not a tax-advantaged account. If you try and cheat and not pay it, they're going to eventually catch you. You'll go to jail. It's not worth it. So just be aware of the fact that 20% profit, if you're trading with all cash money, is going to be reduced down to a 14% profit if you're in a 30% tax bracket. Now, a lot of you wouldn't be. I'm just using this as a higher end of it because it's likely that some people could be. And I do want to show you kind of what worst case example might be. So let's just say you have to pay that $18,000. You'll lose it. It's just the way it is. Your profit was reduced down to a 14% gain instead of a 20% gain. The good news is you still made $42,000 in the period of like 3 months. $42,000, well, the average household income in America is about $50,000. So after they pay their payroll taxes and stuff, they're probably not bringing home $42,000. So in this example, you still deployed your assets in a good way. Your money went out and went to work for you. You didn't have to work for it. In a three-month period of time, you made about what the average American family would make in a year. You made in only 3 months, and that's after taxes. So that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. It could be better, I realize. I don't want to argue. Believe me, I know we're overtaxed. I'm not going to say that we're undertaxed. I'm just going to say that that's reality. You're not going to change it. That's just the way it is. But you still made $42,000. That's a lot of money. And here's the other side of it. What if you made that 20% profit, you made that $60,000, you held it for 3 months, and then you say, you know what? If I just hold it for another 9 months and one day, then I can get this reduced to a long-term capital gain, and instead of having to pay 30% tax rate, you know, I only have to pay 15 or something, maybe 12%, whatever it is. Well, what you're doing there is you're taking a nine-month risk that the market is not going to go down. Now, sure, it could go up and you could make more, but remember, you were trading on a trend, possibly a short-term trend. Your stock bounced up. It went up that 20% that could be expected of a high-flying stock. And what did I tell you? They generally, these kind of stocks, they'll go up 20, 25%. They may go up again, but generally they'll go flat or they'll decline before they go back up. The question is, do you want to take that risk? Do you want to risk the time value of your money over the next 9 months in one day so that you can get this long-term capital gain? Or do you want to take your $42,000 after-tax profit and run with it? What's the old saying? A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, right? It's better to have that $42,000 in your hand than hoping that it's going to still be there in 9 months. Think of it in these terms. Do you want to sell now, take your 20% profit and, you know, whatever, what did we say it was, a 14% profit after tax, your $42,000, take that free and clear now, pay the government the $18,000 extortion money out of your $60,000. I know that hurts, but think of it in these other terms. That $18,000 that you're giving up to the government, in real terms, for you in a risk level in the stock market, that's only a 6% move in your stock. If those 10 stocks that you're in that have been, you've been so fortunate to have them go up 20%, if they go down 6%, and if you look at the stock market, you know that it's not unusual, just very everyday noise in the market, it can easily vary 2-3% in a week. An individual stock can easily fluctuate 5-7% in a week. If your collective 10 stocks, if they go down 6%, you've already lost your $18,000. That's what you had to pay to the government. Remember, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. If you can get that 20% return, take it, get your money, pay the government, don't worry about it. Take the money, be happy with it, go on to make more profits. I think that's the best advice I can give you about worrying about taxes. Don't worry about them. Just take your profits early, take them at a reasonable amount, 15, 20, 25%. If you can get that, be happy with it, be happy to pay the government that money. In the stock market, it's very volatile. You can easily wipe out a taxable gain in a couple of days. I think that's everything I wanted to cover in the anatomy of a trade. I do want to point out to you again and reiterate, stock trading looks simple. And as far as just executing it, it is simple. It's a very small amount of simple steps, but it involves your money, your hard-earned money. It's a complicated world. There are no set odds. It's full of risk and uncertainty. Your emotions are going to be tied up into this because your money's tied up into it. So there's nothing really simple about it. It's an easy way to lose money quickly. Make sure you know what you're doing before you do it. That'll wrap it up for today's episode. Don't forget our contest. Go to wealthsteading.com. Tell me which one of the 10 wealth building principles is the least one downloaded. You have until October 26, 11 p.m. Pacific time. I'll take a random drawing of all the people with the correct answer. One of you will win 1 hour at least of my time on a phone or Skype conversation. I'm really looking forward to this. If this works out, then I plan on doing more of these in the future. As always, if you have comments or questions you'd like to hear answered on the show, don't hesitate to get those in, wealthsteading.com. I do read all the emails, even if I don't have a chance to personally respond to each one of you. Again, thanks so much to all of you that have made an effort to go out to subscribe in iTunes, to leave comments or remarks out there. Really appreciate it. And again, thanks to you that have made the effort to share these episodes with your friends through Facebook, LinkedIn, or whatever social media you use. Really appreciate that. If you do that, let me know too. Go over to wealthsteading.com. Make me aware that you're out there sharing this with your friends. Maybe I can do something nice for you. Well, the market's very turbulent. On our next episode, we'll do a deep dive into exactly what's going on with the stock market and some things you're going to watch for in this correction. Until then, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.